Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
You got no.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
All right, very good Tuesday afternoon here at Harrah's St. Louis, just 9 days before this casino hosts its first ever World Series of Poker circuit event. They've got seven tables full of people playing in their midday tournament, plus a whole bunch of cash games going on here as well. And welcome to the show. Maury Eskandani, who is the executive producer of High Stakes Poker and Poker After Dark and the NBC Heads Up Championship, will join us in a little while. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is sitting next to me here, although I'm keeping my distance because he's got a really bad cold.
How you doing, Paul?
And you can hear it in his voice as well. After a week-long trip back to Vegas.
To Vegas, to Phoenix, several different things going on behalf of Poker Stars. Good trip. Bad for my voice, but a good trip.
Yeah, and of course, allergy season is here in St. Louis, and that just falls like a bomb on your throat. So Dennis will be part of the show today, but not as much as usual. Joe McGowan, the poker coach, is the third member of the team, and he joins us from Southern California. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great, Paul, and all I can say is you feed a cold.
See, there's Joe with the
feed that weight, cold, brother.
The weight loss prop.
He's trying weight loss bet again, of course.
This is the worst thing that could have happened to you, Joe. Let me tell you, I do not feel like eating.
All he's doing,
you're in trouble now.
The only good news for you, Joe, is that every cup of tea he has honey in it. So there's the calories. But I haven't seen him put anything else in his mouth while we've been here. Before we talk about anything else,
I'll let you buy out of it, Joe.
No, thank you.
Little bit early, you know. Knowing Joe, he'll purposely get pneumonia just so he doesn't have to eat. I mentioned that Maury will be along in a little while, and we'll certainly talk about high stakes poker with him. But we have to talk about it with you first because the shows that you recorded out there at the Golden Nugget in November have started airing, and Sunday night we all got to see you lose tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, that was just so much fun.
Yeah.
Glad I could share that with everybody.
Before we get into specific hands, I want to know what it was like, because we've only talked a little bit about the experience last November on this show. I want to know what it's like when you sit down and Tom Dwan is on your left, there's Phil Ivey across the table there's Patrick Antonius, there's Barry Greenstein, there's Daniel Negreanu, all guys that you know, plus Andrew Robles at the table and Lex Veldhuis, and you're going to be playing against these guys with more money on the table. Real money, not tournament chips, but real money than you've ever played with before. You sat down with 200K, which was the minimum buy-in there. What, do you have butterflies in your stomach?
Well, I mean, you're always wondering about it. It's a totally new experience. The thing that made me feel nice is there were only two of the players that bought in for more than the $200,000. I was the only one, you know, buying in on the minimum. Everybody bought in for the minimum except for two people on that thing. And that was
Patrick. Should we guess who the two people were?
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't too hard. And then the third one put it up almost immediately. So there were three of them at $500,000 pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But, and it wasn't too hard to figure out who they were.
Were you upset with the table draw, getting Dwan on your left?
Well, let's put it this way. First of all, Maury came up and apologized for the day I was on because it was the toughest table. And then we did the table draw, and he came up and he apologized again, saying, "This is a hell of a way to introduce you to this." So, you know, it was two strikes to start with.
Let's talk about a couple of the specific hands here, and I want to talk about a couple of hands that you played against Dwan, because these were really the highlight of the show. There was one other hand that you were involved in, and we can talk about that some more as well. But let's talk about hand number one, in which Phil Ivey raises to 3,500. The blinds are 4 and 800.
Correct.
With what's the ante? 100,
200.
200 ante, okay. So Ivey makes it 3,500 to go, which is more than a 3X bet.
Yeah, but that's about standard where we've been doing it, somewhere in that range.
Okay. He has ace-king offsuit. Lex calls with a pair of fives. You're on the button, You call it ace-jack offsuit. The hand we've talked about on this show more than any other, yeah. And which Joe has given lessons on almost like every show for a year. And then Dwan is in the small blind, and he calls with the 9-8 offsuit. Go ahead, Joe.
Are you just trying to make Dennis feel better right off the start because he's sick?
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot, Joe. Yeah. Here we go, guys. It's pick on Dennis.
Go ahead.
All right, there's 16,000 and change in the pot. The flop comes out jack high with two spades. Jack 8-7. It is checked around to you. You bet 8,500 on the button, and Dwan, who's in the small blind, calls. Everybody else folds, so now you got a pot of 33,000 and change.
Right.
You drink some coffee. I noticed this about you because I've never seen you in the middle of a hand pick up the cup and drink.
No, actually, I do that quite often on it.
The turn's a four of diamonds. Yeah. He checks. You check behind. Now, let's stop right there, and I'll ask you. You've got top pair, top kicker. You bet out 8,500 on the flop. He's behind you. I mean, he's first to act. He checks it to you there on
right.
the turn. Four, inconsequential card, although it does put double flush draws on the board. Now there's two spades and two diamonds. Why do you check behind there?
Well, do the math here real quick. There's over 30,000 in the pot.
Yep.
For me to make a bet there, I need to make a $20,000 to $25,000 bet on it.
Yep.
Started with 200,000. I'll have 20% of my chips in there at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
Tom over there is notorious for doing re-raises on it. If I make it to 25,000, he re-raises it to 70,000. I now have a choice to make. Do I put all of my chips in there on this, or do I run away from it?
Mm-hmm.
Why make that choice right there on it? It's early in it. We've only been playing for a couple of hours. That's the first real hand I've got involved in. I would assume he gives me some respect because of that. I've got position behind him. Let's see what happens on the river and go. I don't mind winning 30,000. That was okay.
Okay, but you don't think that he's on a draw there and now you're giving him a free card?
There wasn't that much of a draw out there.
Well, there's two spades and two diamonds, and the board is jack 8-7-4, so there's straight possibilities as well.
Yeah, but what happens then if a diamond or a spade hits and he represents?
Mm-hmm.
All I've got is top pair. I don't have that strong hand. If I build a pot up here and he makes a stab at it on the river, it's going to cost the majority of my stack. So why do I want to build a pot up right now? I'll play it a little like Daniel doesn't play a little small pot there.
Small ball poker there.
Yep.
Joe, you're the poker coach. Give me your analysis of Dennis's play there before we even get to the river.
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, clearly Dennis is trying to control the pot size. And, I mean, there's so many things I could go over with in my head about this. I'm going to try to pick one, maybe two, to just keep it short for the show. One of the things that I think most people don't realize when they watch this show and then they try to take it to their game, you know, when they play 1-3 or 2-5, whatever game they play at their local casino for their real cash money, and they try to adapt Durr's type of style, and they get in trouble and it doesn't work so often. Well, two things. Durr is Durr, and he's a phenomenal player, so you got to give that for sure. Plus, he runs amazing so far on all the high-stakes poker shows that I've seen. Which we'll get into and you'll continue to see as we talk about all these hands with Dennis. But the big thing is he has $500,000 in front of him. Many times he has over $1 million in front of him. These other players get $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 in front of him. That's real money that almost at any level for any person, you feel that type of money. You put a multimillionaire that has a huge cash flow and great income playing in that game, and they put that much money in front of them, they really think. When you play 2-5 or you play 1-3, almost no matter who it is, and they have $200 in front of them, you can't push people around as much, and you can't be, you know, you really can't play the jack sevens and the weird hands that Durr's playing and how he can use the chips and the stack to push people around. And he's typically the aggressor in the hand, and he may bluff off a lot of chips. So, you know, looking back, you know, if Dennis bets there, he may call anyway. He's not one to really throw his hand away. And plus, he limp calls so many raises and in such funny spots to try to take it away and outplay people. So, you know, he very well may have called even if Dennis bet. Maybe not, but I've seen him make calls with third pair and second pair and nothing to do things. And then, you know, bluff off or, you know, catch and then bet and, He's very, very tricky and very, very tough to play. So, you know,
yeah.
It certainly
would not be unlike Durr to call there. After all, he's got middle pair, and he's got a gut shot straight draw. You know, he's got the 9-8, so it's a jack 8-7-4 board. 10 comes, and he makes a straight. Not only that, I remember just a couple of months ago on this show, Joe McGowan was talking about your bluff outs in exactly this scenario where there's two to a suit on the board. You don't have that suit. You're not going for a flush draw, but you can act like the flush draw was what you were going for. And if a spade comes on the river, now you get to represent it, and you're going to be able to make a play there. That has to be part of your thinking, right?
Oh, absolutely. He will represent anything, and he gets to be first to act then when the river card comes. So if a danger card comes out there. Yeah.
You know, with him, he's just so aggressive. You know, everybody else in general, you know, when I pitcher, when I play my, you know, three blind game, that's my regular game here where I live, the 5, 10, 20 game that I play, 90% of the players that I play, give me that same board, give me that same flop, everything, give me the same position, not the same chips, but the size game that I play in, give me the ace-jack and give someone else Dennis's hand, you can fairly confidently go ahead and bet the turn a normal size bet. And most people are either going to call or fold. That's just 90% of the poker population there. You kind of know your players. You know what's happening. Well, we know Durr. Dennis goes ahead and bets a normal size bet there. Who knows what that guy's going to do? And you got to give him respect. He knows when to put heat and when to check and when to call and when to apply pressure. He's a very good player, an unpredictable player that's not afraid of the money. He's using that money and using those chips. That's what makes him such a good player. He could have put Dennis all in there and really put him to the test, knowing that Dennis, first time on high-stakes poker, let me see if this guy has a hand, all this draw-heavy board, you know, he could have anything there. He could have any goofy two-pair. So in retrospect, I've never talked to Dennis about this hand. Knowing everything now, Dennis probably wishes he went all in on the turn or, you know, made some play, you know, but and probably could have maybe picked it up at that spot. But sometimes there's hands where almost no matter which way you play it, you really can't win the pot. You know, if Dennis goes all in, which is kind of a nutty play that no one would probably ever do there, would Durr call? Probably not. You know, but that's, I don't know any other way he could have won the pot.
Yeah, because if you bet small, he's going to call. If you bet the pot, he's Durr, and he's going to play because he wants to think he can outplay you on the river. And if you put in a big over bet there, he's probably going to put you on a bluff or exactly what you have, top pair, top kicker, and it's not going to scare him away either. And who knows, maybe he's going to come back at you there and make exactly that huge raise and put the pressure right back on you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now the river comes the nine of hearts, which gives Durr two pair. And because he's first to act, he bets out 14,800. I always love these odd bets of his where there's always a few hundred extra in here. It's never a round number, which we have to talk about some other time as a strategy, by the way, but not today. You tanked for a few seconds, and then what Joe always calls, you cry called.
Yep.
You put the money in there, and he turns over his two pair, and you tap the table, and there goes $27,000 of your money. At the point where you are on the turn, forget about the option of Durr coming back at you and re-raising and all of that stuff. In your mind, you are probably putting him on some kind of hand. What did you have him on?
Actually similar to the hand that he had, because he'd done that before. In fact, he did it against Daniel a little later. He'll play a middle pair, he'll play a third pair, he'll try to get to the river and see what he can draw out,
mm-hmm.
if he can keep the pot under control also.
Mm-hmm.
So he had something. He wouldn't have just called me there with air because there were two people to act behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to have something in the hand.
Yep.
The people behind him probably kept him from even considering a re-raise on the flop. I would have loved to have seen a re-raise on the flop, because at that stage, I think I could have done something and shoved it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But with Phil Dack behind him, and I can't remember who else was with Daniel in the hand, who was another person in the hand.
Ivy was in there, and Lex was in there.
Lex was in there, that's right. They both folded after he made the call on
right, right.
on it. So you have to give him credit for something.
Yep.
Again, but a middle pair, absolutely within his range.
We're at the final table here. Paul Harris talking with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and the poker coach Joe McGowan, and we're talking about Dennis's appearance on High Stakes Poker just a couple of nights ago. Here's the second hand you were involved in. You raised it up to 3,500 with the three deuce of hearts.
One of those monster hands Joe loves.
Dwan, as he is, want to do. He plays three times as many hands as anybody else. He calls. This time he actually has a hand. He's got a pair of eights. And nobody else gets involved, and so there's $9,800 in the pot, and your heads up. The flop comes out, ace, jack, three, rainbow. You're first to act. You bet $6,500.
Yep.
Dwan looks you over and folds. You showed the three deuce and said you were tired of getting these cards, and as you pulled in the chips, you said something to the dealer like, you're going to have to stop giving me this hand. Had you been getting it repeatedly?
Oh, yeah. I don't think, well, the entire 12 hours I played there, I only had two pocket pairs in 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I had ace-king once, but that was it. I mean, it was a nasty day card-wise, but you have to play with whatever's dealt to you. So I started playing some suited connectors. I started playing, you know, a variety of other hands.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till you see one of the hands I went with next week.
Okay.
Yeah, it's worse. You got to play what you got.
All right. Considering the history of the previous, before we get to you, Joe, considering the history of the previous hand that you played against Durr.
Yep.
Did you have a little moment in this hand where you took it down with a three deuce where you went, ha, 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 ha?
Well, yeah. Didn't bother me a bit, let me tell you that. And right there, I'll tell you, if he'd either smooth called me or raised me, I'd have run like crazy.
You're done with that hand.
I was done.
Yeah, because unlike Durr, you're not getting it all in with bottom pair on an ace-jack-three board.
Probably not.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, and just for our listeners and to kind of throw and sprinkle in some stuff here, you know, Durr folds the eights. On the other hand, you know, where he has like second pair or bottom pair, whatever he has, and
second
bad
pair.
Kicker, you know, from after the flop, you're roughly, give or take, 20% when you have that second pair or whatever it is with whatever your kicker is to hit the kicker or to hit the second pair. And so you have somewhat of a chance to be able to improve your hand. So from his point of view, you know, why did he fold the eights there? Geez, eight's pretty good hands, you know. And flop did come ace-jack, which is also a big part of why he folds. But also his hand has so little chance of improving. He's drawing the two outs, no draw whatsoever, no flush draw, no straight draw, nothing. Dennis is representing the power card, the ace. You know, he was the raiser. I've got to give him respect. My hand's not going to improve. Let me throw this one away. So the other hands and the hand before and the ones that will probably come up later that we'll talk about, there's more chances for him to be able to maneuver. So that's how I think, you know, some of our listeners should maybe start to think, you know, on that level when you're making decisions and you're navigating and you're playing poker. Okay,
that's
guys,
great.
Go ahead.
That's great. Okay, we're up to the third hand you played on this edition of High Stakes Poker. And as I mentioned before, you'll be on the next two Sundays as well as on Poker After Dark later
yep.
this week on NBC. We got a lot to talk about with Maury when he comes on here. All right, third hand, Phil Ivey makes it 3,500 as he had been doing earlier. This time, Phil doesn't do it with the three deuce of hearts. That's crazy Dennis Phillips kind of play. Phil Ivey does it with the four deuce of hearts. Daniel calls from behind with the jack seven of clubs. You call in the small blind with the 9-8 of spades. Dwan calls. Everybody else here, by the way, suited. Here's the difference. Tom Dwan, Durr, eight of diamonds, six of spades. He's in the big blind, but he doesn't have to do anything except put in another $2,700
right.
to call. So there's 15 and change in the pot, and the flop comes out. 8 high. Once again, you have flopped top pair. It's a rainbow board. 8-5 deuce. Your first act, you check top pair. Dwan, who also has made top pair, bets out 12,200. Ivy folds. Daniel folds. You call. First question, why do you check top pair there? Just to see what's going to happen behind you and try to keep the pot small again?
Exactly. Pot control on it. I got three people to act behind me. I can maybe get a read and a feel of what's going on there. I don't want to go against three other people on this thing. Yeah, I have no problem checking that at all.
Any thoughts on that, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, all of these hands, look, you know, I'm friends with Dennis. I'm always going to pretty much stick up for Dennis no matter what happens. So I am unquestionably going to be on Dennis's side no matter what happens because dear friend and all that. But besides that, put that aside for a minute. Most of these hands that we're going to talk about, you know, Dennis is, you know, 80% to win, Durr is 20% to win, or 75-25, or whatever the math is. And most, you know, that percentage-wise, in the long run, Dennis would have won these pots the way that the hand played out. So, you know, it's a little aggravating. That's the tough part of poker. But, you know, Durr is just so unpredictable and plays so many different types of hands, and he also is in his element there with a lot of chips.
Yep.
It's really, really difficult factoring that in, and it's a short thing. You know, that whole high-stakes poker, if that went on longer and Dennis kept getting himself in these situations, Dennis would have come out on the good side, everything being the same. You know, if the math just kind of equaled out these particular hands, Dennis actually would have come out way, way ahead in these stories. But, you know, that's the way it goes. And in other spots, I'm sure Dennis has had a little bit of luck. Who hasn't? But in these spots, it's just, for me, it's always just painful.
The other thing about that, too, I played very few hands. A smooth call there on it. I tell you, I don't know whether they showed it on the TV, but when I just called him on that thing, Durr gave me a look like, what the heck is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Because I honestly think at that time he put me on a monster, or he was afraid I had a monster
mm-hmm.
on it, which was great with me. I didn't mind that a bit.
Yeah. So now there's 40,000 in the pot, and the turn is the four of clubs. So now the board is 8-5-4 deuce, two clubs on the board. You check. Durr checks behind you.
God, I thought he was going to bet. I really thought he was going to bet. I was going to check raise him. And he checked. So I now I'm wondering what he does have. He had me a little confused there.
Maybe he's thinking exactly what you thought.
Yeah.
Put you on some sort of
monster. Well, I would have betrayed it. If he'd have bet, I'd have check raised him there and probably taken the pot down.
The river
and
is
again,
the...
And again, giving credit to Durr, guys, right? I mean, you got to give credit where
it's due.
He did.
Absolutely
player.
Did.
Yep. That's exactly right. Exactly right. The river is the three of hearts. You looked over at Dwan, and you checked. Dwan looked over at you.
Yeah.
He doesn't check. He bets $29,200 into a 40K pot, so it's about 75% of the pot. He, of course, has made the straight with deuce 3, 4, 5, 6, with a 6 in his hand.
Yeah.
Okay, you call here. Why? What are you putting him on?
Honestly, I had no idea for sure what he had. I thought he had pure air. I really didn't think he even had a pair.
He's hoping that you've got an ace, because then you've got the wheel and he's got the six high straight.
It does.
But you don't put him, I mean, you don't obviously have the ace. You've got 9-8. You don't think that there's a possibility he's got an ace there?
No, there's always a possibility. There's a possibility of a lot of different things here on it. And obviously he had the hand there, and it was a good size bet too.
Yeah,
it wasn't an over bet of any kind. It wasn't a please call me type bet.
Yep.
It was a standard normal bet. Here it is, ABC poker,
mm-hmm.
which he doesn't play.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe by him making an ABC poker type play, it may be even more suspicious. I just wanted to see the cards, to be honest about it. All right, so I made a mistake there, as it turns out.
You know the thing,
I wanted to see those cards.
You know the thing is televised. You'll see the cards eventually.
Don't care. I wanted to see these cards.
Joe, talk for a second about how Tom Dwan, in situations like this, gets the reputation of not just being a good player, but also being a luck box. He just keeps getting lucky over and over and over again. Twice against Dennis, once against Daniel, making money in situations where, you know, the rest of us, A, wouldn't have been in there with those hands to start, and B, when it gets down to the situation where the extra card is necessary, he's catching them.
Well, I guess it that reminds me, when you say it that way, you know, some guy goes and plays craps or blackjack and runs the thing up to $100,000, a regular guy, and he loses it all the same night, you know, sitting at the table, and his buddies are like, oh, my goodness, I would have cashed out when it was at $50,000 or $100,000. I would have cashed out 100%. Well, that person that says that never would have gotten there in the first place. They're not a gambler. You know, they just never would have gotten there. They wouldn't have gotten it up to me $5,000. They wouldn't do that. So, you know, you got to understand with Durr, he plays it such a different way, and he is extremely skilled. So, I mean, he's just it looks like he's maybe getting lucky, and he is in spots, but he's playing well too, and he's making checks, and he's trapping people, and he's able to put people on hands. So, it's tough. I have also said how he's gotten lucky and this and that, but I want to be careful how I say it, because I want to give the guy credit. He's a phenomenal player, and I would never want to play him. You know, why would I ever want to sit down and play someone like him? You know, that's a horrible game.
Yeah.
You know, but he's a very, very skilled player. He has run probably the best of all the people on high-stakes poker, you know, overall that I've seen. Daniel, perhaps the worst, just in memory. It looks like he keeps flopping, you know, even the last bunch of years flopping straights, and then a guy makes a full house, or the hand with quads over quads, or whatever the heck those guys had, full house, and then Gus got quads that huge pot years ago.
Yep.
When you keep getting yourself on the bad side of those, the game, you know, when you get monster hands and those hands keep going down, that's when the game gets pretty nasty, because you can only steal and value bet and do so much with the minor and small hands to keep yourself alive. And, you know, Durr is just a great, great player, and he has run pretty good in these last few seasons and shows and played phenomenal.
He sure has, and Daniel really has gotten unlucky.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah, not a commentary on Daniel Negreanu's skill.
Yeah, next week doesn't treat him very well either.
Oh, okay.
So, okay.
Before we bring Maury in here, the executive producer of High Stakes Poker and many other shows, there is one more hand we need to talk about, even though you were not involved in it. We covered all three hands that you were involved in Sunday night.
Look at the hands I played, yeah. 2-3, 8-9,
yeah.
Ace-Jack.
Yeah. Let's talk about the one where Phil Ivey and Patrick Antonius got into it, with Ivey raising with kings and Antonius re-raising with aces, and Gabe Kaplan nearly having an orgasm in the booth there. Oh, all the money's going in. They've each got $500,000. This could be a $1 million pot here. And I don't do a Gabe Kaplan imitation, so this is approximately the way he was putting it. Ivey just smooth calls. He doesn't four-bet there. He just smooth calls, and the flop comes out queen, jack, 10. Check, check.
Yeah.
And the turn is another queen. Check, check. And the river comes a 9. And Ivy bets. And Antonius, who is so deliberate in every action on this show, doesn't matter whether he has a monster or he has nothing, he always looks the same. I'm so impressed by the way this guy looks at the table. You were there in person, so
absolutely,
you can tell me if that's the case. Is that what you observe as you watch
absolutely
him?
Absolutely. Very, very
consistent. You can learn a lot about how not to rush your poker by watching Patrick Antonius just the same way as Chris Ferguson. But Antonius thinks and thinks and thinks and then calls with his aces. And it's not a gigantic pot. Sure, there's a lot of money in there for all of us, but it's not the gigantic pot that you might see in a lot of other players with kings against aces in a cash game. Joe, before I ask Dennis's opinion, since he was there, I want to know from Dennis what he put the guys on there. But I'm curious what your opinion was of that hand.
Well, I love this hand, and I did. I looked at this hand and rewound it on my TiVo at least 2 or 3 times and checked it out. So lucky for me, you kind of brought this up. I'm a little familiar with this one. Sometimes you come up with stuff, and I'm not sure, and I say, Dennis, you want to take this one? But I'm happy I got this one first.
Okay.
That was also raised before it got to Ivy. I can't remember who did it. It might have been Barry Greenstein, I think, to like 3,500.
Oh,
then
so
Phil Ivy re-raised.
Okay, yep. And then Antonius 4-bet.
Correct, it was Barry.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Barry folded.
Now, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Barry folded pre-flop and he went heads up.
Yes. So now, you know, the hand ranges change a little bit. So in my mind, for Phil to just call there, I really believe he puts him very likely on aces. You know, a relatively tight player, you know, on the a shorter type stack, Barry opens to 35. You know, he could have make a play without a doubt, no question, but he more likely would have a hand there. And then for Phil Ivey to be able to re-raise there and then to be able to call the big re-raise, he's got to have something. So at first, it looks like he's got a big hand, but by the time this gets to the river, the most puzzling thing for me, and you never know, and it's hard to knock the greatest players in the world, but I don't know how in the world Patrick is able to call. He can't beat pocket eights. He can't beat nines. He can't beat tens. He can't beat jacks. He can't beat pocket queens, of course, for quads. He can't beat kings. He can't beat ace king. He can't beat ace queen. I mean, there's nothing that he can beat unless Ivy called with 5-6 suited or something. That call is very, very puzzling, and you never know what people are thinking when they're in the chair, or what they see, and what's going through their mind. But I have noticed, on my very humble opinion to these guys, that Patrick has, you know, paid some people off in some very funny spots to me, where he's paid a lot of money, where I think a lot of people probably would have folded. So you know, I don't know if we'll ever get him on the show or not, and it may not be the most comfortable question to ask him what he was thinking in these pots, but I've got to figure he regrets making that call. Obviously, he regrets making the call because he lost the money.
Now, Dennis,
thinking about it, who knows what he put him on there? I just don't get it.
Dennis, you were not in the hand.
No.
So what did you put these guys on?
Well, it was really interesting. I mean, Barry had opened very few pots. He opened this one up, raised, and then re-raised behind him. He ran, which, you know, obviously, unless you had a premium hand, you would do. And then Phil just smooth called it. I think Phil, with aces there, would have re-raised it again, mm-hmm. would have tried to push it, the money out there. So that eliminates one hand for him, but leaves him with a wide scope of others. A flop, a queen, jack, ten out there. That's a nightmare for both of them. If either of them had ace, king, they flopped it. If either of them had a high pair, they probably got a set now. I mean, there's just so wide a variety there that you could be killed with.
Yep.
Neither one of them liked the flop, obviously.
Yep.
Patrick, I thought, was going to bet on the flop. He took a long time, longer than even normal, and then he checked. You know, Phil checked first, mm-hmm. and then there was a check. I actually considered him for a set at this time. Turn card comes a queen, and I went, monsters. He's got his boat. Check, check. Okay, I'm off base. No doubt about it on this thing, on that. Phil with his kings, I could put him on that. I honestly did not know what hand he could have and make that call on the river. Unless, and I couldn't hardly put him some oddball king-queen suited, so he had a set of queens, then he would have had his straight, so that doesn't do it. An ace-queen suited, would he have done a third bet on that preflop against Phil? Doesn't seem likely. A smaller pair? Nothing made sense to me.
Right.
Until I saw the show, I had no idea for sure what he had.
Very interesting.
No, I really did not know.
All right. We have to take a break here. We're desperately behind. Mike, our new board op, is freaking out in the studio right
Uh-oh.
Now.
All right.
So we'll do that, and then we'll get to the guy who's the man behind High Stakes Poker and Poker After Dark and the NBC Heads Up Championship. Maury Eskandani will join us as the final table continues in just a moment. I'm Paul Harris. He is Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips. He is the poker coach Joe McGowan. And this is 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. And our podcast available on thechipleader.com.
Tuesday is Poker Day on 590 The Fan KFNS. So here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the final table, live from the poker room at Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel.
And the guest portion of our show today brought to you by PokerStars.net, the website where you can play against team pros like Dennis Phillips and Daniel Negreanu and Joe Catta and many, many others. And you could also win a dream poker vacation. I think that's what you'd have to call it anytime you get somebody to pay for your trip to go anywhere else in the world and play poker for free.
It's unbelievable.
That's what you can do on PokerStars.net right now. You could win seats to the Mohegan Sun edition of the North American Poker Tour, which is just a few weeks away. You could win tickets to the Latin American Poker Tour, to the European Poker Tour, to the Asian Australian Poker Tour. All of these things available to you just for playing on PokerStars.net. Go download the software. Play new games that you've never played before. If you've never played Raz or Triple Draw or Omaha, Pot Limit Omaha or Omaha High Low, or many of these other games, you can do it on PokerStars.net. Get the training against other players from around the world and eventually end up in one of these tournaments and get blinded off because you play no hands because you're scared because it's your first big tournament. I'm kidding, of course, but you can learn all about any game and win these dream poker vacations right now. Like going to the PokerStars.net. I am Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips, and joining us now, our friend Maury Eskandani, who is the executive producer of the best poker shows on television, from High Stakes Poker to Poker After Dark to the NBC Heads Up Championship, which, by the way, will feature Dennis Phillips, all three shows featuring him, two of them this week. Maury, welcome back to the show.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure having you back. As you know, Dennis is a little bit sick here today. I kind of wish he'd gotten sick last November before you guys started shooting that session of High Stakes Poker.
Nah, be
where
nice.
You sat Tom Dwan on his left. What were you thinking, Maury?
Obviously, that was luck of the draw, but I think he loves it.
Oh, I love like the competition.
I mean, you don't
I
mind Tom Dwan to your left. That's just,
I did
that's,
not.
It gives you all the opportunity to check face on him.
Yeah, there you go. Maury knows me well.
How do you choose the seats? Is it a random draw? Everybody just picks a card like we would do anywhere else?
Well, when the players walk on the set, before they get made up and pretty, they draw a card, and that's their seat. So it's totally random.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis could have had a worse spot, but I can't imagine what it would have been.
Yeah.
he probably picked the worst possible spot that he could sit in. You know, it was pretty jammed in. But I think, you know, that's you guys were talking about the hand, and I was just listening about the Aces and Kings with Phil Ivey and Patrick Antonius.
Yes.
Dennis is new, and he would say, I don't think you've had in the past much opportunity to play with these guys. But next time you play with them, your decisions are going to stem from this season of high stakes. So,
oh, absolutely.
It's funny when with Patrick and Phil, they go back so many years playing, not just high stakes, but every day in these you know, other cash games they're playing. When a decision comes, it stems from way back with so many other instances that has happened between them. It is possible a similar hand had showed up and somebody just flipped over two deuces after all that, you know. and that stuff just sits with you and haunts you for the rest of your life. And I know they tried after the dangerous flop to play some sort of a small ball poker, which was kind of late because he put so much money before the flop. But they just tried to control that pot. But none of them were going to lay down a hand. It didn't seem like. I agree with Dennis. There wasn't much out there Patrick could beat. But when you go back the number of hours they played in the past, I'm sure he found something that he could, you know, yeah, that compelled him to call.
Well, they're obviously two of the best players in the world, period. And the fact that he started out the hand with a half a million in front of him, there's a little respect there back and forth. No doubt about it.
Maury, are you in the booth saying, put in the million, put in the million, put in the million?
Well, we always say that, of course. But, I just want to say, and you know, we had many newcomers this season, including Dennis, and they are put in such an unfair atmosphere. They really are. I mean, I want the viewers to understand this and listeners to understand this, that when you come into a group of people that play with each other all the time and you're the newcomer, you're in a disadvantage. In other words, you don't know what the read they have on each other, and that becomes such a part of the game. So Dennis got into a situation that, A, he had to figure out how everybody plays in the game. B, he had to figure out how everybody plays against other players in the game. So to him, now Patrick making that call or Ivy not re-raising with Kings, all the new stuff that went to his library of high stakes for next time that he plays with him. And it's unfair that advantage exists with the circle of people that play with each other all the time. I'm sure you've seen this before in the game. You go into a new game in a new city and sit in the, you know, crowd of people that play every day, you're at a disadvantage.
Yep.
Until, you know, you learn what everybody's doing against you and against each other.
Yeah, I am so ready to come back.
Are you?
Well, I am so ready
I'm
to come
sure
back.
I'm sure we'll have you back, and I don't want to spoil the fun. I'm sure all the shows have not aired yet, but Dennis does do some wonderful dribbling. You guys just keep watching. You'll see it.
Okay.
I know you're not allowed to say it, Dennis, so I'm just giving a little bit of a tease.
All right, but before we finish up talking about high-stakes poker, I'm curious why you don't do two seasons per year. I mean, Survivor is on twice a year. The Amazing Race is on twice a year. You're doing reality TV. Why not record one in the fall that airs in the spring and one in the spring that airs in the fall?
Well, hopefully it does happen. You know, high stakes, first season, I believe we did record two seasons in 1 year. Maybe the second season also like that, I can't remember. But that's all network's decision. You know, how much poker programming they want. GSN has been wonderful enough to create a poker island within the network for poker anyway, so maybe they will, and within that, you know, they're showing other poker. It's just not high stakes. They're showing so many wonderful other shows.
Yep.
And hopefully they will add some more to high stakes. We'd love to do more.
Well, we'd love to see it. It is absolutely the best poker on TV, and you and your crew there do a great job with it. You also do a good job with the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championship, which you recorded. Dennis was invited to be one of the 64 players just a few weeks ago at Caesars. I have to ask you about something that's been going on online, some discussion about the format for the Heads Up Championship. Some people complaining that it's too fast, particularly because you've got really good players in there, really good people who are very skillful at this game, but that the format and the structure of the format of the tournament is too fast. What do you say to that, Maury?
First, let me ask you, the complaint didn't come from Dennis, did it?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I don't think Dennis had any complaints after coming in
none
fourth.
Whatsoever.
You know, I've heard this before. This is not the first year I hear about this, you know, from the players. First, I'd like to ask the winners how they thought the structure was. I don't want to ask the guy to get knocked out. I don't think any of the people that win this tournament tells you the structure was too fast, too stupid, you know, too ridiculous. No one would say that. Look, before this started, I had a group of people at my house. We made them wonderful dinner. We played the structure, which was faster than the structure. This year, we added one more level to round of 64 and round of 32, which nobody mentions. But anyway, going back to the reception, they came to my house, they played the structure at the end of the session, which was, again, faster than what we played last season. I asked them, did you guys feel like you played poker? Well, there were eight pros. All eight said yes. There is no way you play the structure and feel like at the end you didn't play poker. Yes, if you get knocked out, you can feel like you didn't play poker. But I want to give you a ridiculous example. Let's take a golf match. Let's take a golf event, which is normally 72 holes. And let's condense it. Let's make it a really fast structure, made for television golf, you know, where we're going to invite 64 players and, you know, make some, you know, invite mostly high professionals, high-ranking professionals, mix them with some qualifiers and celebs. And let's say we make this so fast, this structure, that's ridiculous. Not even one hole. Let's say when they meet, they play one shot. I don't know if you guys play golf, but let's keep this down to the pairing happens, and when I meet a pro, we'll just take one shot of the par three, closest to the hole wins. Would you guys tell me if any of the qualifiers had any chance to take seven shots? They have to do it seven times. And when this, I mean, this ridiculous golf structure that I just explained, would a qualifier off the street can come in and win this event? No chance. There is no chance you can hit a closer shot to a pin seven times in a row against better players. And this is what this is all about. This is an NBC made-for-television event, like the All-Stars of NBA or baseball. And we invite top pros, we invite some qualifiers, we invite celebs, and in order for them to win it, they have to win a structure of format seven times. As a matter of fact, guess what the qualifiers... I did a little bit of research on this when I heard about the blogs. But guess what how the qualifiers have done in the last six seasons of Heads Up Championship?
Well, I know they haven't made it to the finals.
What percentage do you think they've won? What percentage? I was 17%.
If there's total
skill in this, why are the qualifiers that are novices coming to this have done so poorly?
Yep.
So there is a skill to it.
Good point.
And it's certainly not as fast of a golf structure I gave you, but, it's certainly a faster structure made for TV, but the winners, and as you go back and see who won it, they're all top pros. It's going to take something like a miracle like a lightning for a qualifier or a celeb to win this event. They have to beat a better player seven times. So that's, it bothers me when I hear all this. The fact of the matter is it's a very fun show to watch. It's geared for broader poker fans. And the majority really don't care about the nuances of, how a structure is and how, intricate the game can be and real detailed poker. They just want to see a fun event. And I think it is there. It does well for NBC, and it does well for the poker in total.
Well, I'll tell you what. That was an experience out there that I'll never forget. Being able to play heads up against Chris Ferguson or Ellie or Doyle, and it's mano a mano across the table and playing it, and it brings out all your poker skills. You play so intense and so hard, and if you ever have a rush playing poker, you'll never get a bigger one than playing at this kind of a level.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Absolutely awesome.
The NBC Heads Up is going to be airing on Sundays, 11 to noon Central Time. April 18th will be a one-hour show, then a couple hours for the following few weeks, and then I think it wraps up with a three-hour show on May 23rd, right before a lot of us will be going out to the Rio in Las Vegas for the World Series of Poker, just one of the many things Maury's involved in. Let me ask you about all these years of producing Poker TV, the sixth season of Poker After Dark, of high-stakes poker, several seasons of Poker After Dark, several seasons of the NBC Heads Up. You and I, years ago, played against each other in the old Bellagio 61-20 game, so I know you'd be a pretty good poker player, but I wonder if you're seeing things now that you didn't see when you were just a player. As a producer, are you seeing things from the players on TV that you couldn't see when you were just a player?
Well, let me, this is a very good question, and I'll be happy to answer it. It's not seeing things, it's reconfirming things that you thought in your heart existed, and now you know they exist. And that's what producing all these shows and watching the great players play has shown me. The 20-some years that I played poker, I was primarily a cash game player. I mean, people always ask me, why don't you play tournaments? And I always thought tournaments were, you know, like my friends say, too fast of a cut. And it didn't really work for cash game players and all that. And not realizing that there's a lot about tournament. No matter how, you know, it's structured, there's the right way of playing it. Some mathematical, mostly mathematical, and certainly some psychology behind it. But doing these events, they showed me that there is skill and quite a bit to in tournament play, and also showed me that my logic and my philosophy never look at the players when they're winning to see how good they are. Always watch them when they're losing if you want to rank them in your mind really truly exists. And when I see in high stakes and other shows players, you know, playing from behind, how well they're playing, and, you know, you actually see their hands. What hands? Their hand selection is not wavering. You know, their logic is intact. To me, that's such a pleasure to watch. Have I learned? I've learned because No Limit was new to all of us, except for the handful of players. No Limit wasn't something that we played every day. So certainly watching the shows has taught me quite a bit about No Limit. And when I, once in a while, go back and playing poker and playing No Limit, I feel much more comfortable. I'm, getting in the game than I used to when you and I were playing.
Maury, you put on great TV, and we always appreciate having you on the show. And, you know, thanks for giving Dennis a little bit of a career boost with all the TV. But more importantly, thanks for being a friend of the show. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much, guys. And, Dennis, I'll be seeing you soon in the second.
Absolutely. Hopefully I can speak by then.
Maury Escondati, the producer of High Stakes Poker, Poker After Dark, NBC Heads Up, and so much more here on The Final Table. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the group that Dennis and I have long been members of, and Joe is a member of as well. We all support the game we love through the organization that lobbies for us in Washington. This could be the year that we finally change the laws that get in the way of people who are playing poker all over this country, but getting hassled for it. Home games, online players, charity events, etc. The Poker Players Alliance is fighting for you, but they can only do it with a huge membership, and we want to add you to the roles of that membership by asking you to go to theppa.org. That's theppa.org. Join the Poker Players Alliance and support the game that we all love so much. Now, before we go today, let's talk about this place, Harrah's St. Louis.
Absolutely.
Which in just 9 days is going to be turned into the poker capital of the Midwest when they host their first ever World Series of Poker circuit event.
Well, you're starting to see the response already, the day each week.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just people showing up for the $139,000 bad beat here.
No.
They're playing to figure out how they can make some money when the two-week circuit event starts on April 1st.
Yeah, and just you look at the schedule here. It's unbelievable. Buy-ins from $200, $300, $400, $500 buy-ins, a variety of different games, something going on each and every day. You know these are going to be some massive pops out here that are available for people.
And by the way, this weekend, if you come out here to Harrah's St. Louis, they're doing qualifiers on Saturday and on Sunday where you can win a seat into the $5,000 main event for $120 buy-in. And they're doing it as a double shootout. You play against your table. You win your table, you go to the final table. You win that table, you win the whole thing.
All you got
to
beat is what, 18
other people? 18 other people,
that's
and
it.
You win a $5,000 entry into the main event.
How many times have you beat 18 people?
Anyway, well, you know, I've done pretty well this year.
Yes, you
so
have. You've done very well.
Been pretty good for me.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to playing a lot of these events and a lot of the cash game action that will be here as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
It's going to be tremendous, and we're looking forward to what Brian Grody and his team have put together here at the Harris Poker Room. A lot of this is going to be deep stack action with lots of levels of play.
Yep.
And the Jimmy Summerfield and the pros from the World Series of Poker Circuit are going to be here running things, and they do a great job as well. So we're really looking forward to it. We'll have more details on it for you next week, which will be just before the whole thing goes. In the meantime, go to our website, which is thechipleader.com. Get podcasts of the show, subscribe via iTunes, and meet us back here next Tuesday at 2 for another edition of The Final Table from Harris St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.